You are listening to the Alouettes Flight Deck, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
All right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff.
Give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal through the floor. I'm begging for more, you better.
And welcome to Alouettes Flight Deck, podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football, sponsored by Bad Monkey Popcorn. I'm Tim Kepper, along with Cliffy D. We get the win. We didn't blow that 12-point lead.
Nope. First place, baby. First place.
And it's been so long. How long has it been since we've been in first?
Week one?
Well, you know what I mean. This quote-unquote late in the season.
We're
7 weeks, only 7 weeks in.
Well, you're right. This week in the this late in the season, yeah, it's been a little while.
I'm trying to see 2-4, and we've been basically matching the past 3 years, past 3 out of 5 years. I think obviously. We're 3-4. Sorry, 3-4. We haven't been 3-4. Holy crap, we haven't been 3-4. Let me go. There we go. I guess we could say since we've been 4-3 back in 2012. So, woo!
Yeah, I think it's the first time since the Trussman era that we are now in first place. So it's funny. There's so many naysayers and doubters about this Alouettes team, and I can understand and appreciate that. I mean, a lot of moves that were made in the off season and into training camp and everything, there's a lot of question marks being raised about this team, and with good reason. But sometimes, folks, like I say, you got to trust the process. You got to have faith that the people in charge are doing the things that they have to do in order to provide success. And it's kind of hard to crow success big time when your team is essentially 3-4, because as I've said, you are what your record says you are. But right now, our record does say that we are in first place. So I guess we can crow a little bit, but when you compare it to other teams in the CFL, there's still a lot of work to be done. And the players will tell you the exact same thing, too. I mean, it's great. It's a wonderful accomplishment. How long it's going to last, only time is going to tell. But for the moment, the Montreal Alouettes are in first place in the Eastern Division, and that's really all that matters.
No, I think what is funny is who is the player that was asked, how does it feel to be in first place at 3-4? They changed it in the Gazette, but he basically said it feels like.
That would be the always outspoken Nick Lewis. He's never shy to share his opinion. And you know what? That's why you love the guy, because he tells it like it is. And he's not wrong, folks. I mean, yeah, you can't be too happy about being 3-4. I mean, yeah, it's nice that you're in first place. That's great. I mean, to put things in perspective, Ottawa last year finished the season in first place at 8-9-1. Do you think that I'm sure their fans were very happy to be in first place and with the end result when all things were said and done. But at the end of the day, you can't be too proud of being 8-9.
No, they weren't. They were proud that they were Grey Cup champs.
Well, that's it. The fans were proud. The fans didn't care. At the end of the day, that's all they cared about. But I guarantee the player, like any player that has pride in what they do, anyone who puts in the work, busts their ass day in and day out to be the very best football player you can be, and the end result is not even a 500 team, and you're still in first place, and you still get all the benefits that go with it, but you can't truly be proud of that.
No.
And I guarantee none of the players were really, truly proud of it. They may have been relieved that, you know, they get the first round bye, they get a little bit of an easier road to the Grey Cup, if you will. And again, the end result showed that, yes, they did win the Grey Cup and they get to benefit all the benefits that go with it. But at the end of the day, I'm pretty sure that a lot of the fans would be, or the not the fans, but the players would be like, yeah, we're supposed to be better than that.
You're saying we can be winners with benefits?
Why can't we?
Oh, winners with benefits.
Imagine that.
A little bit more to talk about. You know, we've been lucky that, you know, things come across the wire that we're able to talk about things the day of taping. So, but first thing we have to do, and I don't care if we only have one flavor left, Cliff, we're spinning the damn wheel. We are in our last week of the Bad Monkey Popcorn that was afforded to us by our great sponsors over at Bad Monkey Popcorn. I came across another one this week, Cliff, in which we'll have to do another taste test. I will be more than happy to do a re-taste test. I picked up another one of their flavors, which they don't offer in a small package. They offer in a huge, giant package. So, but we'll talk about that a little bit more. We have one flavor left. I'm sort of sad.
Yeah, it's been quite the odyssey that we've been on for this taste test. And yeah, I'm kind of sad to see it go as well. But you know what? I think we're going to be finishing strong. And like I said, Bad Monkey, if you want to send some more flavors our way, we'll be more than happy to keep the taste test going.
Exactly, exactly. Or you know what? For once, I don't mind with money. The price that I saw that this flavor was, it's well worth the price. Well worth the price. So I don't care what everybody says. I'm going to spin the wheel. Just spin the damn wheel, Capper. What do you mean, spin again? No, I'm kidding.
I could totally see that happening.
Actually, it did happen. I just didn't change anything on the wheel. Chocolat.
All right. So not just chocolate, though. Chocolate and sea salt.
And sea salt. And what's weird is, and I you know, I know a little bit of French. You and I both live in Montreal. Why is there no E? I thought there was an E after chocolat in French.
Nope.
Isn't there, or am I just thinking of, I'm just a damn Anglo that I am?
You're a damn Anglo.
I'm an Anglo, yes I am, I'm an Anglo, hear me. Yeah, okay, I don't have a song. Open up it. Okay.
Oh, the smell is heavenly.
It's very chocolatey.
Is it ever? I don't get the salt smell to it. I'm guessing it's just a little...
Yeah,
a little
but
bit of salt.
This, come on, the only thing, even with salt and vinegar, you smell the vinegar.
Oh, I agree.
But you know?
There it is. Let's do it to it.
It's a fudgy chocolate.
Yes, it is. Sometimes you get more of a cocoa flavor when you get these chocolate popcorns, but...
Yeah, but yeah, now that you say that, maybe there's sort of an aftertaste. It's still fudge. It's more fudge than anything else, I think.
No, that's just it. I find that there's a lot more but fudgy chocolate flavor to it. Get a little hint of the salt. Mmm. Ooh, actually, I just got a nice little hit of the salt right there, so that's nice.
You know, I like chocolate. I like chocolate, but I am. I don't know.
Oh yeah, I find that the more I get. The more I eat of it, the more the salt, like that sea salt taste comes through, and it really balances well.
Okay. Where would you rate this out of footballs?
I'm going to go with, honestly, for the creativity and just the overall taste, I'm going 4.5 footballs.
Wow.
And I'm not a sweets fan. I'm really not. But this is the right amount of salty and sweet. Very similar to the
bad girl?
The bad girl that we tried last week.
Sorry. Bad girl or the baby girl? Because this one is, remember, because the other one, this real sweet one is the baby girl.
Yeah. So that's it. It was like the bad girl was more savory and sweet, I really liked.
Yeah. I just thought of something. What if you mix the baby girl and the chocolate together?
Oh, my. That'd be like a cherry cordial.
That's what I was thinking.
Ooh.
But for me, this is, and you know what? I like the idea, the execution as well, but it's my least favorite of all the flavors.
Oh, wow.
And so I don't think it's, you know what? I'm going to give it right there at half. I'm going to give it 2.5.
Ooh.
It's my least favorite. I don't know what it is. It's good. I'm not anybody who gets the chocolat. It is a good. It's a different flavor. Hold on a second. I got something here. I got my baby girl in hand here. Okay. Get one baby girl.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, baby girl. You know what I like. Let me sing a song for you. Dun, dun, dun.
Is podcast after dark a thing?
Yes. It's like in the old TQS Saturday nights after dark. Blue Nuit. If anybody happens to know old time Quebec TV, if you know what Blue Nuit is, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh gosh, I think that was a rite of passage for many a young boy living in the province of Quebec.
Wow, wow. Hold on a second. So here we go. This is a combination of baby girl and chocolate. Here we go. Hold on. I think you want to have a little bit more chocolate on it because the baby girl actually overwhelmed that one. Would you believe?
Wow.
Yeah, it overwhelmed the chocolate. And I had a clean palate too, so. Mm. Let's try this one more time. You're gonna stop munching in your ears, people.
Okay.
Here we go. So let me go the chocolate one first. I don't know. If you had any baby girl left, I'd tell you to try it.
Oh, this popcorn, I'm quite frankly surprised that you have still popcorn left over.
Yeah,
you
must, yeah. We had six flavors to go over.
They're so good that, yeah, just.
Oh, as I said, see, yeah. So, obviously, we are thanking Bad Monkey Popcorn again for being our sponsor this year. If you want to find any and try Bad Monkey Popcorn, obviously, if you're not at Percival Molson Stadium, which you can go and check it out over on the north and over in the north stands at every home game. Head over if you're in Quebec to any major retailer, a major or independent retailer, grocery chain, and try it there. If not, head to Bed Bath & Beyond throughout the rest of Canada. For more information, head over to badmonkeypopcorn.com. Clean the palate. Okay.
Clean the palate. That's quite the segue because we've got some news.
That was unintentional.
But perfect.
What's the deal with backup quarterbacks?
Wow. Well, perhaps it's funny because traditionally the most popular player on any football team is the backup quarterback.
And the Owls have had quite a few. You know.
They certainly have. And,
you know, even AC himself was a backup quarterback.
He was. And as I recall, when the Alouettes signed him in 1998, I was less than enthused about that because, quite frankly, he was quite terrible playing for the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
And Las Vegas.
Well, Las Vegas was just terrible all around. Yeah. But that's not AC's fault. He tried to make the best of a bad situation and these things happen. But yeah, no, AC sat on the bench for 2 years here in Montreal, and the rest, as they say, is history. So it's with that in mind that I just have a hard time processing the news that came out today that the Montreal Alouettes have traded backup quarterback Vernon Adams Jr. to the Saskatchewan Roughriders, along with a couple of with a draft pick.
Yeah.
In exchange, the Alouettes received defensive back Tavon Campbell, a third-round draft pick in 2018, and a fifth-round draft pick in 2019.
But also the Owls gave up a draft pick too, didn't they?
They did, a fifth-rounder in 2018. So a couple of picks get swapped here, and essentially what it boils down to is Vernon Adams now goes to the Riders. Yellowettes do get some defensive help because their secondary is still a bit banged up, especially with Chris Ackie going down for the season.
Even this past weekend, we got to talk about that more too. So, see, when I first thought, and there, I was like, my first comment again was, "What is with the trading of backup quarterbacks? You know, first or letting letting them go? You know, Brandon Bridge. Then there is, you know, we have Vernon Adams." We had Adrian McPherson, and these are the ones that were of some value. Tanner Marsh, these are guys of value, you know, not the ones, not like a Ted White, even though he was the backup quarterback and started the Eastern final for the Owls when AC was hurt, way back when. So my first thought was, and I said this on Twitter, is that, you know, we gave up so much for Vernon Adams just to pick him up. First round draft pick. And in return, we get what we did. We didn't get a first round draft pick. We needed, according to Kavis Reed, it's because of the current injury situation, we got what we actually needed, which I understand. And after seeing how many guys actually went down with knee injuries, it kind of made sense. So I don't know. You know, Drew Willey is now our backup quarterback. You know, he's going to be doing holding on field goals and extra points. I don't. It's like they're not given a chance. Now, you have a couple theories about just this, and you know, we joke and say, you know, which team is becoming more Alouette centric, Toronto or Saskatchewan? What? I mean, you have basically, isn't the same three quarterbacks now in Saskatchewan that were here? No.
Yeah, with the exception of Rakeem Cato. You take a look at the quarterback situation at the very start of 2016. It was Kevin Glenn, Rakeem Cato, Brandon Bridge, and Vernon Adams Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Three out of those four guys all now are members of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders.
Yes.
1 year later. It's unbelievable. There's just no other words to describe it. It's mind-boggling, really. And I think what bothers me more than anything else, like, because when I heard the news about the trade, I'm like, are you kidding me? Why would you trade the future? Because truthfully, and a lot of people have been sort of hot and cold on Vernon Adams for reasons I can't begin to imagine, because
it's like a Katy Perry song.
Yeah, pretty much. There's fireworks here.
Hot and cold.
There's no dark horse, though. That's the unfortunate part.
Yeah,
I can go on,
folks.
It's
very bad that you and I are able to ramble off a couple of our titles just like that. I'm wondering how many of our people are just rolling their eyes. Yeah. You think about also, and I know we're talking about Saskatchewan specifically, but I'm wondering what the guys over at Piffleverse thinking. Poor Brandon Bridge. Is he going to get demoted again?
Could be, which is unfortunate because he's actually had a couple flashes of brilliance coming in. Mostly in mop-up duty for Kevin Glenn, but I mean, Bridge, I thought, okay, maybe this is something that Chris Jones is trying to explore a little bit more. Maybe he's starting to see the potential he has in this young man. I've always said, with the right development, and maybe Chris Jones is more interested in developing the quarterback for the future than what they have in Montreal. Maybe for Chris Jones, he has to believe that Kevin Glenn is a stopgap solution at best as well. And at Kevin Glenn's age, that's pretty much where he's at right now, is he'll keep your head above water and give you the chance to develop the quarterback to the future, which for Saskatchewan, I honestly thought could very well be Brandon Bridge with the right amount of training, with the right amount of experience, the right amount of reps. I truly think you do have something there. I thought so when he was in Montreal, and you and I are both in agreement that there's something there, if properly cultivated, that Brandon Bridge could be a decent quarterback option for somebody in the Canadian Football League. Now, all of a sudden, you've got Brandon Bridge going over to Saskatchewan, and that's going to further complicate things because, again, this is another quarterback with burgeoning talent that, again, might just need just a little bit of seasoning to get things right. And he'll definitely get the opportunities out there. And I guess maybe the Alouettes think, well, we've got Darian Durant. Well, we're fine. We don't really need another quarterback. Why?
What are we reverting? Are we reverting back to the days of AC? Because, as I said, we've had quarterbacks that have done quite well, and then they've been benched, and then they've been released. Tanner Marsh went through the exact same thing. By the way, congrats to Tanner Marsh on a great season with him in the Arena League's Cleveland Gladiators, who got beat in the semifinal this past weekend to the Tampa Bay Storm. I'd love to see him back in the CFL. I'd love to see him continue in football. But again, another quarterback that has been let go by the Owls, who showed some signs of, you know, being able to play.
And what worries me more than anything else is, as you said, I think we're reverting. I think it was the same thing when AC was quarterback for the Alouettes.
Yes.
Was, what's your backup plan? Are you not saving for a rainy day? Because that was the big thing.
Well, the backup plan was AC staying in into the game no matter the score until there were 3 minutes left in the game.
Pretty much. And now that we've got Darian Durant, and again, Darian Durant is proving himself to be a very capable quarterback still, but he's one twisted knee or shot to the head or torn something from basically giving the keys to the kingdom to Drew Willey now. And does anyone in Montreal feel confident that Drew Willey could lead us to the promised land? I sure as hell don't. The Toronto Argonauts sure as hell don't. Like, when Mark Trestman, the quote-unquote quarterback was
first-round draft pick for him.
Yeah, when Mark Trestman, the quote-unquote quarterback whisperer or quarterback guru, decides that, you know what, no, I'd rather go with Cody Fajardo and Jeff Matthews over this guy, what does that say? To me, that's very telling. And there's something here I'm seeing more and more, and I really don't like it, is Anthony Calvillo, as a quarterback coach, unwilling to work with someone who plays the style of Vernon Adams? Is he more comfortable with trying to mold the quarterback of the future to be just like him? Does he feel that Drew Willey, could he make an Anthony Calvillo out of Drew Willey? I think that's what AC has to be asking. And maybe this move, that's what this move is telling me, is that I think AC would feel more comfortable taking a relatively developed quarterback, like what Drew Willey is, and sort of tweaking his game a little bit to make him more of an Anthony Calvillo clone. I can't help but wonder if that's the strategy right now, because Vernon Adams definitely is not going to be an Anthony Calvillo quarterback, and you can't really train him to be an Anthony Calvillo quarterback. It's just not his style.
No.
And rather than having the student shape to the teacher, I think the teacher decided to just cancel the class and start a whole new curriculum. And that's pretty much what's happened. And unfortunately, now Vernon Adams is going to go elsewhere. And if he flourishes, it really isn't going to be a good look for the Alouettes, because now we're back to square one of, we got a good quarterback and we're just going to keep recycling. Is this going to be the plan now? Is just to keep recycling other people's quarterbacks instead of developing our, is it because we can't develop quarterbacks, or is it because Anthony Calvillo does not want to develop a different style of quarterback other than what he himself has done?
I saw some people joke on Twitter saying, just like you're saying, it's like, yeah, the Owls keep on doing that. I said, don't worry. Sooner or later, you'll be able to sign a Ricky Ray or a Travis Lule or Jonathan Jennings or so on and so on. I mean, it's like that's how it feels. Now, what besides, and we know what Kavis said, but what do you think, this is a de-popifying of the Montreal Alouettes, where Kavis Rae completely wants to put his stamp on this team and say, quarterbacks XYZ, you know, you're being summarily Simpsonized and you're cut. What's your thought on that? I mean, is it something that seems to be happening, or is it as Kavis said, it needed to be done? He was the only guy of value.
I think there's something to that in a sense, but I can understand and appreciate why a general manager that comes in, and let's not forget, Kavis Rae inherited the whole Vernon Adams thing. This whole idea of trading your first round draft pick for the rights to Vernon Adams, that was a Jim Popp move, not a Kavis Rae move. So Kavis had no say in this whatsoever. He inherited this, and he inherited a lot of the Popp quote-unquote mistakes, if you want to call it a mistake. I personally didn't think it was a mistake to get Vernon Adams. I that's a move I still would have made again, and I still would have seen this through. But I can see how a lot of people would think that there's a lot of mistakes that Jim Popp made, and Kavis surely must see that as well. And I think in his mind, it's his job to clear out all the Poppisms, if you will. And unfortunately, Vernon Adams would have to qualify for that, and that's just part and parcel for this. Again, understandable. Everybody wants to put their own imprint on a team. I get that. And this is yet another chance for Caves Reed to do so. In addition to getting rid of all the other beloved former Alouettes this past offseason and bringing in his own sort of people, this is just yet another move in that same vein. And whether it's going to work or not, only time will tell. Like I said, my concern is that whether you think Vernon Adams is the future or not, he still represents the future that could have been for the Montreal Alouettes once Darien Durant calls it a career. And yes, Durant could play another 2, 3, 4 years easily, and perhaps Adams would just sit on the bench and maybe get some mop-up duty here and there. It's hard to say, but is that really such a bad thing? Someone did ask me on Twitter about that. Like, do you think Vernon Adams is happy just to sit on the sidelines and just be like the short yardage quarterback? And I said, you know what? We go back to AC once again. AC sat on the bench from 1998 to 2000. And last time I checked, that worked out pretty okay for the Alouettes. So the
problem is, though, since then, as fans, we were comfortable, very comfortable with AC under center. And, you know, him turtling when it came to the rush and sacks. But that was AC. And now when he goes down, we all know how he felt. And we've been going through this drought trying to find the next guy.
Yeah, and rather than develop, now we're at the point where it's just taking on other people's quarterbacks. And again, I'm not saying this to put down Darien Durant, because again, he still is a great quarterback.
We keep forgetting too that Drew Willey does have a lot of experience and he has won. But as you said, you dare give the keys to your new Tesla over to Willey?
Well, and again, what I've pointed out on numerous occasions is that what you see out of Drew Willey is what you're going to get. He is not going to evolve, or at least I don't believe he's going to evolve. I think he's plateaued. If anything, he's only going to get worse as time goes on. He's welcome to prove me wrong, both he and AC. If somehow Anthony Calvillo can turn him into the next Anthony Calvillo, listen, I'll happily eat crow. I'll be more than happy to do so. But right now, as of today, I'm not convinced. I just don't think that if Darien Durant goes down to injury and you have to throw Drew Willey into the mix for Montreal, I don't feel 100% confident in that move.
Right.
And you take a look at who else, like Ja'Cory Harris. I don't know how much he's going to get as far as reps go. If he's ever going to be given a chance, could he be the guy? It's hard to say. Or now, are we starting to think about when the end of the season? Are we going to be scouring elsewhere for Montreal's quarterback of the future? And will they also want to just sit on the bench and wait for Durant's career to end? Because we're going to run into that as well. It's very easy to say, oh, well, let's make a trade for this guy, or, you know, sign James Franklin from the Edmonton Eskimos when free agency hits. But it's going to be the same thing again. Like, this guy is going to want to start, and he's not going to get a chance to start in Montreal as long as Darien Durant's there. So, again, if you're not developing quarterbacks, the only option you have is to sign free agents or make trades like this where you have to bring in someone else's talent, so to speak.
Yeah.
And to me, it just doesn't bode very well for the coaching ability and the development ability of this new regime, which is kind of troubling, to be honest with you. That's why I feel like they've pulled the chute way too quickly on Vernon Adams. He was never really given a chance to truly lead, and it's really unfortunate. I think that Vernon Adams has all the tools to be there. I think it's just a matter of giving him the opportunities and surrounding him with the talent. I think he could have really made an impact in due time for the Alouettes, but now we'll just have to watch and see what happens with him in Saskatchewan. I think he'll definitely get a lot of chance to play there. Again, with Kevin Glenn, I mean, you know what you're getting with Kevin Glenn right away, and he's not a young man anymore. How much time does Kevin Glenn truly have left? And in which case, once his time's up, it's going to be either Brandon Bridge or now Vernon Adams. And yeah, they'll be given every chance to learn. They'll be given every chance to possibly get some reps. And whether or not they succeed, I guess, once again, time will tell. But the fact that Saskatchewan is willing to give these guys the opportunity and Montreal isn't, like I said, is disconcerting, to say the least. And I don't know. Maybe it's just the shock of the trade still sort of affecting me. But why does it seem like Montreal is unwilling to develop young talent? And I think that's the key more than anything else. And perhaps one other thing, too, to sort of go back on, AC is a Tressman guy. He's learned from Tressman, and you saw what Tressman did for AC, because AC wasn't looking all that great in 2007.
Right.
A lot of people thought maybe this would be the end of the road for him. And Mark Tressman came in and breathed new life into Anthony Calvillo, got an extra 5 years out of the guy, which was nothing short of impressive. But and I'll give credit to at Blue Bomber Talk on the Blue Bomber Talk podcast. One thing that John from the podcast said that Mark Tressman is he doesn't develop quarterbacks. He just extends the life of older quarterbacks. He's essentially the Ziploc bag of coaches.
That's a great analogy. That's
it's true,
amazing.
Though.
Amazing.
Because you look like, yeah, he got an extra 5 years out of AC that probably nobody else could have. Ricky Ray, until he got injured, has been doing fairly well under in Tressman's system. And these are older quarterbacks that people were not too sure of, and then all of a sudden able to breathe new life into them. And I just can't help but wonder if that's going to be AC's coaching style, and maybe that's why he thinks he can maybe take a middling at best quarterback like Drew Willey and maybe make something out of him. Could that be the thought process? Could that be where he's getting his ideas from? I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see what happens now that Drew Willey is essentially the backup quarterback in Montreal. And yeah, I there's a lot of these things. There's a lot of moving parts to this, really, truly. But I just can't help but wonder if that's really the thought process in Montreal right now.
Now, my last thought on this is what kind of surprised me is, look what we ended up – I know we're getting into another situation when we talk about this, but look what we're getting – look what we ended up getting for Vernon Adams, right? Look what we ended up getting for S.J. Green. This is what blows my mind is that, you know, we get a third rounder, more than a third rounder for Adams, and we get a fourth rounder for 10-year vet S.J. Green. Yes, I understand he's coming off of an injury, because I know you have – and maybe this rants for another day, but I know you I know you have some issues too with just what we are getting. Did it surprise you that we got better for Vernon Adams than we did for SJ Green?
It's hard to say, really, because we still don't truly know what Vernon Adams' potential is. So it's hard to, it's easy to think whether we got fleeced or not on this one. It's speculation at best. A lot of people, you look at it now, and yes, we got fleeced on the SJ Green deal, but I think, more than anything else, I think there was some bad information that was given, because you take a look at what SJ is doing and you can't believe that he was essentially made available for a couple of draft picks. But I really think everybody truly underestimated just how well SJ was able to recover from this injury. And again, it could all end tomorrow. I mean, he could take a bad twist and tear everything again. Anything is possible. But to take a look at what he's done so far now this season – You can't help but feel like the team got hosed in this deal. And I guess that's always going to be the concern no matter what is – unless we end up drafting the next Anthony Calvillo or SJ Green or anything like that, like it's all speculation as far as the draft goes. You never know how the draft's going to pan out. And you take a look at – a lot of people are saying, well, what did we gave up that first-round pick for Vernon Adams. And what did BC do with it? They went ahead and they drafted Danny Vandervoort, who is only now starting to get some playing time. He could end up being one of the great receivers, or he could end up being a bust. It's still too soon to say. And I remember the player that we drafted essentially with Toronto's pick this year, Malcolm Carter. This is a kid that I'm very high on, and this is definitely a futures pick. But you take a look, like a lot of people are even saying, like, who did we trade SJ Green for? It's like a guy who's not even playing for the Alouettes right now. Like, well, of course we got hosed on the deal. And it's easy to see it like that, but you just have to hope and pray that 2-3 years down the road, when Malcolm Carter is playing for the Alouettes, and if he can play as well as an SJ Green, then you don't feel so bad about that. But you got to think for now. Like you got to be in win now mode, and that's all the moves that Montreal made in the offseason was so that Montreal can get back to the playoffs and win the Grey Cup now.
Yeah.
So when you see these deals go down and you see all this future potential, in theory that's good, but at the same time,
but again, as I mentioned before, we're reverting back. But we're reverting back to. I don't want to say the status quo. I don't want to say the status quo because you know the Owls have had some great upgrades on defense. Great upgrades on defense. But that's what's been carrying this team for so long. It hasn't been the offense until recently. It's now melding melding back into what it was with a system where it was almost equal. So,
You take a look at the future, you take a look at the young talent that we have in the secondary, for example, and you can't help but feel encouraged. But at the same time, you're still trading away proven veterans. And even though Vernon Adams isn't a veteran, he still has CFL experience. He still is – the potential of this young man has still not even been close to being reached.
Yeah, I know.
And I think that's what's going to hurt more than anything else. And again, when it comes down to what if? What if Darian Durant gets hurt? And that's another troubling thing. Like throughout the Calvillo years, they never really – you had Adrian McPherson. And yes, he had talent. But we never got to truly see it. And then by the time we did, it was too late.
Except just in a certain one-off start here and there.
Right. And even then, that's no way to develop the future. Like, you can't keep going into it thinking that your star quarterback, who's won Grey Cups, is going to play forever. And then this thought process that started with Jim Popp, and now I'm starting to see it with Kavis Reed, is, well, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. It's like, great. But you know what? When it came time to cross that bridge, you didn't know which way to go, and the bridge didn't look all that great to cross. So this is my concern right now, is when it comes to the quarterback for the Alouettes, yeah, you got Darian Durant, and you know what you're getting with him, and he's been playing very well, especially as of late. But then what? Drew Willey, Ja'Cory Harris, Matthew Schiltz, these are not names that are going to inspire people and get people excited.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah, it's funny you're saying crossing that bridge right now. I don't want to. Do I dare call the analogy where we basically it seems that we've gone back to is the Alouettes are currently that bridge where Transport Quebec has deemed that the bridge is safe to cross over, even though it is crumbling daily.
God bless Quebec.
Looking for something different from your snacks? Grab a bag of Bad Monkey popcorn. Bad Monkey Popcorn is produced locally in Montreal in a number of mouth-watering flavors that will have your taste buds wanting more after just one kernel. Now available throughout Quebec in most major grocery stores, independent outlets, and selected cities across Canada. For more information, head to badmonkeypopcorn.com.
Hey folks, we appreciate your continued support of the Alouettes Flight Deck podcast. You can find all of our previous episodes over on Podbean. Just head to alouettesflightdeck.podbean.com. You can also find us on iTunes and Google Play Music by searching the keywords Alouettes Flight Deck. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @AlouettesFLDeck and check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/AlouettesFlightDeck. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns about the show, you can shoot us an email, alouettespodcast@gmail.com. Once again, thanks so much for listening.
So I hope for the best, obviously. Football can be tough. And you know, it just seems to be that's, and speaking of tough, we're talking about how bad because of the changes, because of the injuries and stuff that necessitated this trade, you know, finding out today, in our win over Toronto, but it was, you know, we lose Philippe Gagnon, we lose, Shulgin, we lose JC Beaulieu, who had been a great surprise this year. And then Alex, I almost was mispronouncing his last name.
Perchowski.
Yeah, they all suffered knee injuries this past week. But overall, the team did well. I mean, yes, the team was going up against a Toronto Argonauts team. Had the riches again of Mark Trestman. It had SJ Green. It had Ricky Ray, but Ricky Ray was on the sideline. So that's the thing. Ricky Ray's on the sideline. The Owls go up. Was it 15-0?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that they coasted again. The first half was absolutely amazing. The team pulled within 12 points. You know, Argos pulled within 12 points, and there was 5 minutes left in the fourth. And I said, oh, my God, are we going to do this again? The defense played amazing. They even played absolutely amazing. So it's just a matter of what does this team need to do to – we've seen it so far this year. We've seen the perfect drives. We had another one, and it was a perfect pass by Durant. An amazing pass to Cunningham. So it's, what does this team need to do to just get it all together? I mean, it's, you know, he scores 18 points in the first half. He scored a grand total of 3 in the final 30 minutes. That's not going to win many games at all. As I said, the defense is helping this team win these games once again. You'd hope it would be balanced, right? You'd hope.
you'd always hope that, but and on the surface, people should be happy. You just beat the first place team 21-9. You essentially kept them from scoring touchdowns.
Yeah, yeah.
The best they could do is three Liram Hirulahu field goals. On paper, that should be exciting. You should be thrilled that your team played this well, but it did not feel like a complete total domination of a win.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
The second half for Montreal, it really felt like that prevent defense was prevalent throughout, and then you just were just doing just enough to kind of keep Toronto at bay. And again, these are not strategies that are going to win football games and make people feel confident that this is a team that belongs in first place and can consistently win. And this is what I find more troubling than anything else. And talking to the players after the game too, nobody was ecstatic about this win. Like, it just felt like, well, of course we should have won this game. Of course, we didn't have to worry about Ricky Ray. We didn't have to, you know, we should have dominated. And again, on paper, yes, you did. But I mean, in all reality, this game could have turned in a hurry. And there was a couple of times where I really thought it was going to. But I don't know.
These teams are basically even. I mean, if you put together the total net offense, I mean, Montreal outgained them 314 to 296. But that didn't show what happened in the second half. I mean, Brandon Whitaker was running wild like a madman. Fajardo was at 60 yards, I think, as a quarterback. I mean, he was pulling a Dan LeFevre again. he reminded me of him, just being able to run like he could. And it makes you wonder, if he would have started the entire game, where would this game have been?
I think it definitely would have taken a whole different tone. I don't think – and again, I had to laugh when they said Jeff Matthews was going to be the starter because he hasn't thrown a pass all year. What the hell did you expect? Like, this was definitely a miscalculation on Mark Trestman's part.
The quarterbacks for Toronto really did not do anything at all. I mean, a grand total of 142 yards passing. You know,
you're not going to beat Montreal's defense with that.
18 to 28. That's nothing. That's nothing at all. You know, again, Tyrell Sutton, again, 15 rushes, 66 yards, but yet he was overshadowed by Whitaker and by Fajardo. You know, to me, it's, you know, we had, how many we had? 7 receivers catch a pass, including George Johnson's TD.
First TD for the national rookie. That's very impressive.
Yeah.
And what a touchdown, too.
I said B.J. Cunningham before. I was talking, it should have been Ernest Jackson's touchdown. I'm sorry. I misspoke. But, yeah, both touchdowns were great. Both touchdowns were the passing touchdowns were actually very, very good.
Yeah, and I, like I said, this was the connection that has to be made. Darren Durant to Ernest Jackson, we got to be seeing more of that if Montreal wants to string together more wins. These two, I think they're now finally starting to find that chemistry that everybody was expecting from game one. It's now starting to happen, and the fact that Durant's able to spread the ball around, find different receivers, including Johnson, like I said, that even his touchdown throw, like Durant looked like he was going to get crushed, but got rid of the ball perfectly, and Johnson just lowered his shoulder, rumbled into the end zone. It was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, there were a couple of issues too. Once again, the Owls were, I think they recover a was it a fumble? And brought it down to the within the red zone, close to the goal line, and once again they stalled. I think that had to do with the J.C. Beaulieu situation, where you know, they tried something different. I think they would have tried to use him, but with him being hurt, it didn't help. Again, why? And also tried to pass. I just don't understand sometimes the play calling at all with this team. It's frustrating as hell.
Yeah, and once again, you're left with the same thing we've been seeing over and over again, is settling for three when seven is sitting right there. You have to take advantage of these situations, and this is not the time for conservative play calling. I know you don't want to make any mistakes, but again, you've got an experienced quarterback in Darian Durant. If he sees something, he should be able to adjust on the fly, and don't stick to the plan. If you've got to call the audible, call the audible if it's there. Whether or not it was or not for him, only Darian can say for certain. But again, it's frustrating for fans to get this close. And that definitely would have been the kill shot right there. I mean, they were already up by a fair bit, but I mean, that really truly would have salted the game away 100%. Instead, you're settling for a Boris Bede field goal. It's it's tough. And how many times in the past Montreal has let games slip away because they blew these opportunities? It's unfortunate, but at least this time around it didn't cost them the game. But once again, Alouettes fans have to see that from their team and just can't help but be just a little bit disappointed in that kind of effort.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, but you know, the Durant seems to be doing quite well when it comes to his receivers, whether it be Stephon Logan, Tequan Underwood, which is back. I mean, it's Nick Lewis who's this close to tying Ben Cahoon on number two all time for receptions. I think he's three away coming into the second game of the home and home series with Toronto. Sutton's back, and see, that's what I like, by the way, having Sutton back in the lineup and his ability to take the screen passes. It throws another dimension into the game. You know, same thing with BJ Cunningham. We just seem to have great weapons. It's just that they're not able. I'm going to reach out to Steve Daniel. I'm really curious to know what the Owls are when it comes to first and goal inside the 10. How many touchdowns have they scored?
Doesn't feel like very many, but
I mean, it could be a very interesting stat league wide to see how teams stack up against each other, because you know, you talk about getting in the red zone, but what about if you are first and goal inside the 10 or inside the 5? You know, it's, you think you would score at least 75% of the times if you're inside the 5 with first and goal. So I mean, any other bad things we can take away? I mean, as we know, there are many good things we saw in this game itself. Why do you think there was such a letdown in the second half? Was it a matter of we got this in the bag type of thing? Because I would hope that they're not thinking that after halftime and after what happened in Winnipeg.
I would sincerely hope that as well. I really just think it came down to, it could be the bye week. I could be coming off that, maybe not wanting to expend too much energy, or maybe they knew they had to face Toronto again in a week's time, so maybe they don't want to expose all of their tricks, so to speak.
That to me is bunk. Playoffs, I can understand, but that seems bunk to me.
Hey, listen, I'm not disagreeing with that, but it could be any number of things, really. I just really think that, like I said, I think that this team got out to an early lead. It looked very impressive, and then just decided to coast and hope and pray that would have been enough. I think they maybe just didn't take Toronto as seriously as they could have. And I think you saw a lot of that, especially in the second half, with Fajardo just literally running roughshod all over the Alouettes. I mean, this is an Alouette defense that's very blitz happy and usually has no problem bringing the house. But I mean, if your quarterback's already out of the pocket and just running for first downs, you got to be able to adjust to that. And they didn't seem to be able to do that for the longest time. I mean, thankfully, this defense, I always say it's very bend but don't break. Mm-hmm. And again, at the end of the day, they did not allow any touchdowns in this game, which is impressive and of itself.
It is.
But my word, like, just to let your opposing quarterback run all over you like that, and then handing off to Whitaker, who has been so quiet at times, but every once in a while will have these like incredible games. And this is where the people start wishing that Brandon Whitaker was still with the Alouettes. I'm like, well, I wouldn't trade Rutley or Sutton for Brandon Whitaker. I'll tell you that right now. And I love Brandon Whitaker. I think he's a hell of a person. But if he was having more of these games, he'd still be an Alouette. Problem is, he doesn't have these games very often. He usually ends up injured or playing so-so at best. It's just whenever he comes to Montreal, though, he seems to be extra motivated to kind of remind everybody the kind of quarter or the kind of running back that he used to be. And this is what he does. And we'll see what he does next week, or this coming week, I should say, when the Alouettes play the Argos again. Will he still have that same sort of game, or will he revert back to being kind of middle of the pack at best?
Yeah. They're a positive. I think one of the positives, by the way, attendance was up by 1,000 over last game, even though of the collapse that had occurred. That's a positive. It was a nice day, a nice night for football. So I mean, they got to do something to have a complete game. We've seen that this year. The best gauge, except for the ending, is the Winnipeg game. That was a complete game. The game versus Edmonton, to me, was pretty much a complete game too. So it's, I don't know. I understand you want to have perfection in football, but you need to have consistency in football. And I just find that the Alouettes right now are, the Alouettes are not doing that, and that's frustrating, especially with the what seems to be the offensive firepower that we do have, underrated as it may be, because I think a lot of people don't see it as that, considering where people keep ranking the Alouettes in their power quote unquote power polls. So it's consistency.
That's the thing. Montreal is going to have to start being consistent in everything they do, not just on defense, but they've got to be consistent on offense. They've got to be consistent on special teams, and they just got to find ways to win and win convincingly. And that's it's easy to sort of write off any sort of victory from Montreal as, well, they're in the East. Of course, everybody's lousy in the East, so it sort of diminishes what they do. But no, at the end of the day, they're doing what they have to do. They have to win games. And right now, they've got the best record against Western teams of all the other Eastern CFL teams.
That's true.
They're 1-1 in their own division. I mean, right now, again, 3-4 is still not very impressive. There's no question about that. But if Montreal can get its act together, and truthfully, a lot of those losses should be wins, this team has potential to be much better than what their record indicates. Like I said, you are what your record says you are. But right now, Montreal has to rise above that. They have to find ways to, like you said, stay consistent and convince people that this team is for real. I believe that, all things considered, this is a very good football team. It's just time that maybe they start believing it themselves and start proving it on the field. And I'm really hoping that this Saturday we can see a much more convincing game, win or lose. And I believe this team can be so much better. And I think it's got to start now, because this month especially, you take a look at the teams we're playing. We're playing Toronto again. We're not 100% sure if Ricky Ray is going to be playing or not still. So, I mean, that's a potentially good thing right there. We're playing Ottawa, which is, I'm sorry to say, not a very good team. Playing Winnipeg again, which is sneaky good. But we gave them fits in Winnipeg, and it just took a few miscues from Montreal for Winnipeg to win that game. So, I mean, that, again, a very winnable game for Montreal a couple weeks ago. But now they're coming into our house to be able to do that. So, again, it's just a matter of taking care of the little things and just doing everything properly. And if they can accomplish that, they could go undefeated in August. It's not as crazy as it sounds when you think about it.
No, not at all. Not at all. Now, speaking of continuing to go undefeated, we have a game coming up this week. And with all the injuries that have occurred for the Alouettes in the past 7 days, one thing that came across the wire to me is a little bit of frustrating, but I understand, because I'm trying to explain to my other friends who don't know all the intricacies of the Canadian Football League when it comes to juggling a roster because of ratio. And I can just imagine how tough it is. But hearing that, and this is where I understand, because I mean, we got the new DB coming in. He's a national. What about what's happening this week because of the other changes, the other injuries, is that Tyquan Underwood is once again going to be a scratch. Now, mind you, it was because he was a scratch before because of the concussion. But now they're going to scratch him. But they're going to take, I guess we could say, fan favorite, you know, Samuel Giguere off of the 6-game injured list early because he's there for a hammy. I'm wondering if this could turn out bad. It depends on how much work he's had and where he is when it comes to, because hamstring, as you and I both know, hamstring injuries are tough to get over because you don't want to overdo it at first.
This is true.
And I don't want this to become a situation, because then we're going to have another issue again when it comes to who are we going to start. If Giguere does well, who are we going to start? Mm-hmm. We seem to be loaded. You know, Tyquan Underwood has shown. He's shown that he can play. You know, him and Giguere are two different types of wide receivers, in my opinion. I don't know. It's going into this game, and besides hearing the rumors right now, because right now it's really early in the process when it comes to news for the Argos, but we have heard at least through one practice that Ricky Ray was taking first team reps.
That's right.
So who's going to start this week? So is Tressman going to close practice again?
He's done it before. He'll do it again if he has to. I mean, it's all about these mind games, I think. And that's what I think it was last week with the Toronto. They could very well be, too. It's just a matter of, do we really want to see what we have? Because we all thought it was going to be Cody Fajardo that was going to be starting for Montreal or against Montreal last week.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, here comes Jeff Matthews.
See, that was a surprise. Yeah.
That was a huge surprise. But again, it unfortunately didn't pay off for Trestman. Now we've got Ricky Ray leading the charge in practice. Is this more mind game? Is he really truly ready to go? Like, how is he feeling? Again, there's still another 2 days of practice, so it's all speculation at this point. Where it comes down to for the Argos, it's could be more mind games. It could be more of who does Montreal prepare for? Which quarterback should they be getting ready to face at BMO Field? Is it going to be Ricky Ray? Is it going to be Cody Fajardo? I'm fairly confident it won't be Jeff Matthews based on his performance this past Friday. Just wasn't he didn't look prepared at all. And we know that Trestman typically does not give his a whole lot of reps to his backup quarterbacks, which is not the best strategy as far as I'm concerned. But hey, Trestman knows what he's doing, right? Or at least that's what everybody's hoping for in Toronto.
We put faith into him for all those years, he knows what he's doing. He knows what he is. Mind you, this is an older, wiser Mark Trestman. So
maybe he's got the Ziploc on Ricky Ray now. So maybe he's
that's perfect.
Keep him fresh.
I love that. I love that. So if he keeps it fresh, if red and blue don't yellow and blue don't make green, then what does that mean? And by the way, and something we had forgotten to do, and we have to at least give props. I mean, we're talking about the defense before. We did forget there is a game ball. We did forget to give it, and we just wanted to mention that. I think you and I came up that we determined that the game ball went to the defense for the last game. So, what does this defense have to do to not have a letdown in the second, you know, the second game of a home and home occur this time around? I mean, no, doesn't matter who starts. I mean, are we basically going to regurgitate what we're just talking about, what the team did? They need to do something different. They have to do something different.
I mean, it sounds kind of lazy to say, but I mean, it really does come down to the quarterback, because Ricky Ray and Cody Fajardo are completely different quarterbacks. So you also have two different strategies altogether in playing this particular offense, because they're going to go with who they feel is going to give the team the best chance for victory, naturally.
Right.
And if Ricky Ray is not 100%, I just can't imagine they'd take a chance with putting him out there and risking further injury. Because if Ricky Ray goes down for the rest of the season, that's it for the Argos. I'm sorry to say, just based on the quarterback performance we've seen so far. But for Montreal's defense, as blitz happy as Noel Thorpe likes to be, we saw how it didn't quite work when Cody Fajardo was playing. You've got to respect the run, mm-hmm. not just from Fajardo, but whoever. You look at Anthony Coombs and
Brandon Fajardo.
Well, maybe not respect Fajardo. Well, of course you got to respect him. The guy's the quarterback. I mean, if that's who they go with, and that's who they go with. But respect the run more than anything else, because the ground game for Toronto was pretty outstanding. Even if they weren't able to score any touchdowns, the fact that they were able to move the ball very well against this defense is very telling. I mean, like I said, bend but don't break is great, but it was scary just to see the first down start to rack up in that second half for Toronto. And somehow, some way, this defense has to put a cap on that. They've got to find a way to stuff, whether it's Anthony Coombs, Brandon Whitaker, Cody Fajardo, whoever it is that's going to be running the ball for Toronto, you got to find a way to stop that right quick, because it was nothing short of impressive. The fact that SJ Green only had 32 receiving yards.
Yeah, no kidding.
Like, the fact you were able to shut down SJ Green is nothing short of phenomenal. And that's why they had no choice but to go to the run, because they saw that when a world-class athlete like SJ Green can barely get any traction on this Alouettes defense, obviously you got to switch up your strategy. So at least give credit to OC Marcus Brady for the Argos. He knew that, okay, we're not going to beat these guys through the air, clearly. We can't match up toe-to-toe on this defense in the air. So let's keep the ball on the ground and let's run them into the ground. And that's exactly what he did this past Friday. And fortunately, they couldn't take it to the house, but Montreal had no choice but to respect the run after that. So we're going to have to see a lot more of that from Montreal. They're going to have to find ways to stop this run quickly if they want to have the same kind of success that they did this past Friday, this coming Saturday.
Yeah, I said also have a different game plan too. Maybe they got to try something a little bit different. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how the Owls do. It's their first back-to-back home games, home away series since 2013, where they had a plethora of them. They also played Toronto in back-to-backs that year. Back-to-backs are interesting, aren't they? I mean, it's I can see it, understand it in a nine team league, but it just. But what's your opinion on back-to-backs? I mean, yes, they do it for Labor Day usually, but those are the storied rivalries, and this is just a series that is pre Labor Day.
As far as back-to-backs go, I mean, it's no matter what, you still have to be prepared for whichever team you're facing, and I don't know. I mean, and they tried so hard to make Montreal-Toronto a rivalry just because the Montreal Canadiens and the Toronto Maple Leafs had that rivalry going, and some people still believe that there is that rivalry sort of built in, but I just don't find it's quite there. It's almost like trying to manufacture the rivalry between Montreal and Ottawa, like the Alouettes versus whether it's the Red Blacks, the Renegades, or Rough Riders, trying to manufacture that sort of divisional, not just divisional, but sort of geographical rivalry. I think what it comes down to more than anything else is you get a chance to play your opponent once, and then you go to their barn and play them again. You should sort of have a good idea of what their tendencies are, and now you've got some actual film to sort of work with. But by that same token, so does the other team. So ideally, you want to have as much going on as possible. You want to have strategies and just keep everybody guessing, because I guarantee you right now, Trestman saw a lot of what Montreal brought, and he's working feverishly to counter it. So you better not go in with that exact same game plan that you did last Friday and expect it to work this coming Saturday. I really hope Chapdelaine and the rest of the coaching staff switches things up just enough to keep that same consistency as far as moving the ball and getting as many people involved as possible. But at the same time, now they know what to expect basically from Darian Durant and this receiving team. I'd like to see more of the run game being used. I don't see why you can't have both Sutton and Rutley going in. Have both of them just sort of pounding that defensive line and just make them respect our run, if you will. I don't see why that wouldn't be necessarily a bad thing, and somehow find a way to just keep opening things up, because we saw some very exciting football in that first half last Friday, and I'd love to see more of it, quite frankly. That's how you're going to get people excited again. That's how you're going to restore the faith that a lot of these Alouettes fans seem to have lost. And the fact that you've just traded your backup quarterback, who was starting to become really popular, as backup quarterbacks tend to do, now you got to find new and exciting ways to get this to keep the people of this team interested and keep them excited about the next game. And that's how you're going to do it, is to really capture their imaginations with some exciting play. And that's what Montreal's going to have to do against Toronto this Saturday, is keep opening things up and do like you did the last time, in the sense that you got to pile on the points, but don't take your foot off the pedal in the second half.
Exactly. Keep your foot to their throat.
You got to have no mercy.
Yeah. There is no line as of right now through five dimes for the game. I don't know what I would give this game. I think they'll probably give it, once the line comes out, I think Toronto will be slightly favored, but I think they're waiting to see who is the starter, I think, or may just give it another day. But also, Montreal has beaten Toronto the last seven out of eight games in Toronto. The latest loss was their first game last year at BMO Field. So they're going to try to break that streak, extend their winning streak, and to get another game up on Toronto, because they'll only have one more game left. But they would win the season series versus Toronto, right? They'll win the season series. If they win this one, they win the season series.
Pretty much, yeah, because they still have to play one more game in September.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if Montreal is able to win this back-to-back, like home-and-home series, yeah, they would essentially have the season series tied up, and again, another game in hand in the East, which is definitely crucial.
Yep, they'd be a game and a half up on Toronto.
And again, that's what it comes down to. Like, it's important to win as many games as possible, but like I said, these divisional games are definitely so important, especially when you take a look at what's going on right now. Hamilton still winless, and they too have been going through all sorts of upheaval. And I think they will eventually get their act together. In fact, I actually do kind of think they're going to win their first game this weekend. That's kind of what I'm feeling right now. But I mean, that too is a process that has to be dealt with. Ottawa, they keep coming close, but man, I tell you, that's what's going to be interesting about this Ottawa Hamilton game is someone has to win, and unless it ties. But I tell you, it just seems right for this seems like the right time for Hamilton to finally put a win in the win column, because Ottawa has come close so many times, and they too have so much potential, but they just can't seem to get it together, especially this season has just been a real wake-up call, I think, for a lot of people about Ottawa. It's now come time to admit that this is not a very good team. Again, lots of potential, but potential doesn't equal wins always. At the end of the day, you've got to go out there and play the games. And Ottawa's come close a few times, but they just can't seem to put it together. And it's very surprising. So this is all the more reason why Montreal, when they play these divisional games, they have to take full advantage of it. They can't just half-ass it and hope and pray that they'll find a way to come out ahead, because Lord knows the referees aren't going to give you any love. You got to go and you got to do what you did in that first half against Toronto. You got to just kick them right in the face and keep piling on. But you cannot coast. That's the big thing. The second half really felt like Montreal was coasting. And you can't do that, especially if Ricky Ray does play, because you're going to be facing a different team than what you faced last Friday. Ricky Ray is that much of a difference maker still. And I just don't see the Argos putting him in unless he's as close to 100% as possible. And right. If he is, that's all well and good. But I'm just not sure right now. I guess the rest of the week of practice will tell the tale. But if Ricky Ray is less than 100%, I just don't see him starting. And again, it can only be good for Montreal. But if Ricky Ray does end up playing, then you better be ready for that as well. And that's going to be key right there for Montreal more than anything else, is just being prepared for any and every possible situation. And I definitely think Montreal will go into this game at BMO Field, and I think they'll play extremely well. It's just a matter of paying attention to all the little things more than anything else, and just finding a way to close. Don't just get into the red zone. You got to score when you're in the red zone. Don't walk away with, don't settle for three. You got to get that touchdown, and you got to keep getting those touchdowns until the score is ridiculously lopsided. And that's really, truly the only way. Not only are you going to win games like this, but really prove to everybody that this team is for real.
Yeah, I agree. It should be a good game. I'm looking for a good game. I'm still on the fence if I'm going to go to it, the game in Toronto. I know you're headed there. Represent us well. It'll be nice to see actual fans in the stadium.
And one thing I will say as well, if you do go to the game, and this is for everybody in the Toronto area as well, your ticket to the game also gets you into the CNE exhibition, or the X as it's known, which, again, normally you'd be paying like 15, 20 bucks, I think it is, just to get into that. But you'd get free admission to the X. So and the game's at 4 o'clock. So you go, you watch a football game. Then afterwards, walk into the X, ride some carnival rides, eat some deep fried nonsense. It'd be a great time. So why not take full advantage of it? I mean, that's a fantastic promotion they've got going on in Toronto right now. I mean, it's no Doug Flutie bobblehead, but I mean, a free admission to the X is nothing to sneeze at. So if you're going to the game, whether you're a Toronto fan or a Montreal fan, definitely take full advantage of it, because I think it's a great opportunity to see not just some great CFL football, hopefully, but also take part in a great Canadian tradition. What better way to finish off the summer than go to the X, ride some carnival rides, eat some carnival food, and just have a wonderful Saturday evening.
Yeah, exactly. So it should be fun. Enjoy the game, Cliff. And we will see you guys next week.
Oh, actually, one more thing before we sign off.
Yeah.
I want to give a quick shout out to the boys over at the Eskimo Empire podcast. They are currently recording their 100th podcast. So congratulations to those guys for
fake news.
No, they're fantastic guys.
They are great guys.
Yeah. So shout out to Andrew and Superfan Mike. They do an absolutely fantastic job there. And also next week, the BC Lions Den will also be recording their 100th podcast. So shout out to Brian and Mojo there. Once again, those guys do absolutely fantastic work.
Even more, it's all part of the fake news.
Why the hate, man? Hey. It's all about love. This is the CFL, man. This is the Canadian football.
You can like people. You can hate a team still.
That's fair. That's fair. But it's all about love with the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Yes.
Great shows to listen to. Yes. So definitely give them love for their one for each of those podcasts reaching 100 episodes. Absolutely outstanding. So hats off to you guys.
Hats off. I agree. And with that note, enjoy the game this week, guys. We will be back next week to talk about the back end of the home and home with the Toronto Argonauts, and hopefully a little positive news off. So we'll see. So we'll see you next week. So for everybody here at the Alouettes Flight Deck for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.